Hello and welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host Joshua Briscoe, and as we enter the dark days of the NFL summer, there's still a lot to talk about surrounding your Kansas City Chiefs, which is a breath of fresh air to me and you. We've got news out of the Chiefs secondary, some things that Andy Reid said about a couple of key players going into training camp. I want to look at the worst case scenario in the Chiefs backfield because I think it's still pretty great. That spurred on from looking at where the Chiefs rank, how the offensive stars the Chiefs rank in the NFL based on an ESPN article. We'll look at an early 53-man roster prediction from Adam Teicher, take some listener questions, talk about the future of Dontari Poe, and there's still stuff going on in Denver, and that never seems to fail. Also, the Cleveland Cavaliers just won the NBA title, and as I was sitting there watching the game, watching the postgame, I realized that whenever the Chiefs finally win a Super Bowl in my lifetime, I'm going to throw the biggest rager in nursing home history. It might be 60 years from now, but I promise you are all invited. This might not be news to some people, but to me, this is good news. This is a good progress update on two key players that are going to be a huge part of the Chiefs' defense next year if things go according to plan. Andy Reid said that out of OTAs, Philip Gaines will get the first chance as the number two outside cornerback, and that Steven Nelson is currently the leader at the nickel. If this does pan out, this would give the Chiefs' defense a ton of flexibility. Yes, I will elaborate. I've said before, and I'll say again here, and I still believe it to be absolutely true, that you as a Chiefs fan should not be rooting for a specific cornerback to take that number two spot across from Marcus Peters, but you should be rooting for a specific cornerback, to take that spot. In that, I'm saying you shouldn't be rooting for Kavari Russell or Phil Gaines or Marcus Cooper or Eric Murray or anyone in. You shouldn't be rooting for anyone particular, any one singular corner to win that spot, but you should be hoping, hope on hope, that someone wins that spot outright. That whenever we get to game one, we're saying, all right, it's Marcus Cooper and it's somebody else who we feel great about. And I don't really care too deeply who that ends up being on the outside. Here's why that news from Andy Reid gives me a lot of hope. Because Steven Nelson was drafted in the third round last year. He spent almost the first half of the season, it may have even been more, but it was ballpark half of the season inactive. Was one of the healthy scratches throughout the first half of the season last year. Did not get on the field. Third round pick at a position of need, although Ron Parker stepped up in a huge way at the slot. But Philip Gaines got injured last year so early in the season. The Chiefs needed someone to step up and play that slot corner spot, come in and play the nickel. Ron Parker from the safety spot did an incredible job at that, but Steven Nelson seemed like he had a chance to step up there. He could barely get on the field. Later in the year, he developed, got better, became not necessarily reliable, but I remember seeing him make plays in the Houston Texans playoff game. So, all right, he's not, we haven't given up on him, which would be silly, of course, at the end of his rookie season. I think overall, we as NFL fans, even NFL talent evaluators, are often too quick to pass judgment on a rookie who is moving a little bit slowly or is not living up to the hype that you had rolling into the draft even. So that's fine that Nelson took a little extra time to develop, as long as that development continues, and it sounds like it might be here. Because if Steven Nelson can take that cornerback spot, that nickel, that slot cornerback spot, and be playing the middle of the field there, that means Philip Gaines doesn't have to. Now, if Steven Nelson cannot be trusted to cover the slot guy, to be the nickel guy, if you can't trust Nelson to do that in his second season, then Philip Gaines gets by default, in my mind, pushed back to the slot. Unless the Chiefs think that the safety version of Jamel Fleming can do what Ron Parker did, which was being a bad outside corner, a pretty good safety, or darn good safety here, Ron Parker, and then do a pretty good job covering the slot. Unless that can happen with Marcus Cooper or Jamel Fleming, or cause I don't think the Chiefs want to sacrifice Ron Parker at safety to cover the slot again. If that doesn't happen, then that means I think the Chiefs have to say, listen, Philip Gaines, you're going to have to, and especially when you're going up against this matchup problem slot receivers, Gaines has got to cover that guy. With that, because it's a lesser position. It's the fifth defensive back on the field, but with the way the NFL moves right now, if you have a bad matchup with your slot receiver and the way that a lot of NFL offenses work right now, it's going to slay your defense. So, and I think the Chiefs have more guys currently that fit the outside prototype than the slot prototype. So, hopefully Steven Nelson he was drafted, Steven Nelson was drafted to be the slot corner, to be the nickelback soon. That's his entire purpose here. That's his skill set, his quickness, his quick feet, his reaction ability. He was never drafted to be an outside guy. So if he can do that, that's great. If he can't, then Philip Gaines has to do it. Philip Gaines, in my mind, was also drafted to be a slot cover guy. Whenever he was still healthy and Sean Smith was going to come back from his suspension and Marcus Peters was locked in the outside, the Chiefs secondary would have had Peters, Smith, and Philip Gaines on the field covering three receivers. That's incredible, and that's what Philip Gaines was here to do in my mind. But I think once the Chiefs saw that Sean Smith was not going to be here this season, they said, all right, give us Steven Nelson. We'll have Steven Nelson try to take over as the nickel. We'll move Phil Gaines outside whenever Sean Smith goes. So if that long-term plan actually hits, which is fairly rare in the NFL, I think, and guys develop as they'd like, Steven Nelson locks down that slot spot, and Philip Gaines can move to the outside. That's fantastic. That means the Chiefs have to do very little adjusting from their previous plan. That also gives them incredible flexibility, because the Chiefs have three rookie defensive backs on this team who I think all have some really nice potential. And I know that's a very homer thing to say about a third, fourth, and sixth round pick, but I like what these guys bring to the table. I talked about this back in the draft show, if you want to rewind and go back a couple of months and find the post-draft show where I talk about all these guys. But Kavari Russell, third-round pick out of Notre Dame, Eric Murray, fourth-round pick out of Minnesota, and DJ White, sixth-round pick out of Georgia Tech. Kavari Russell and DJ White are here to play corner. Eric Murray has been getting some safety reps, definitely did in rookie minicamp. So maybe he moves around a little bit. He's never played safety before. But those guys all can play. Those guys all did play corner in college, and I think very highly of Kavari Russell. Whenever that draft pick came in, my immediate thought was that this ends up, and it still could go this way, that it ends up being Peters, Russell, and Gaines as out, number one, number two, and nickel. And I still would actually lean towards that, but at this point, I would be thrilled to see Steven Nelson lock down the slot spot. And then if he gets hurt, if he struggles, you know you have a guy in Philip Gaines who can go and play that. Philip Gaines can eliminate a lot of issues there because, I mean, and we've only seen him do it as a rookie because he missed almost his entire second season. But what we saw him do towards the end of his rookie year, really, maybe I oversell him by saying he'll lock it down, but I think more than anybody else, I saw real improvement from Philip Gaines out of that rookie class, which is very, very encouraging. To think that he can continue to make another step here in his third season while missing almost his entire second season, but to make another step here, Steven Nelson makes another step in his second season, and then you have Russell, Murray, and White, all of these guys redefining the depth that the Chiefs have in corner. It's the NFL right now. You've got to have four corners that you can believe in a little bit. Right now, I might say that the Chiefs have one. I really believe in Marcus Peters, and frankly, he was targeted more than any corner in the NFL last season. But he's still going to be tested on a different level. While he did stay on his side of the field almost all of the time, if not actually all the time, opposite Sean Smith, he didn't go up against the best receiver all the time. That's going to happen more often now. Although, if he still doesn't move side to side, then maybe it won't. But because in that case, Philip Gaines or a rookie are going up against DeAndre Hopkins pretty consistently. But Marcus Peters, being the guy in a defense, is simply different. Marcus Peters was tested all the time last year and won Defensive Rookie of the Year because he stood up to it and performed extremely well as a very, very tested rookie cornerback. Now he's the veteran. He's the most proven guy. He's the highest ceiling guy. That's going to be different for him. So I do have concerns about a little bit of perceived regression for Marcus Peters. I don't think he's going to play worse, but I think he's going to be tested differently. Not tested more, not with more targets, but tested in a new way. That makes everybody else in the secondary so much more important because they're going to be tested they're going to be tested like Peters was last year. Peters is going to get the guy treatment. And in a best case scenario, he's so locked down that teams try to keep their number two receiver on him as much as possible and just count that matchup as a loss. And in that case, you're taking really good wide receivers going up against Philip Gaines or rookie Kavari Russell, rookie Eric Murray, rookie DJ White. I don't see Marcus Cooper being that outside guy, although I talked about that also a couple weeks ago, which is also pretty interesting. That Marcus Cooper has the most experience out of any of those guys I mentioned in this system, in this secondary. If the Chiefs believe in Marcus Cooper's physical talent and think maybe that they can spruce him back up after the beating his confidence has to be taking lately, then that's fine. I'm not going. Right now, I think there's a better chance that Marcus Cooper misses the roster cut than is starting week one. I think it's going to be Philip Gaines or Kavari Russell, and Philip Gaines or Steven Nelson for that number two and that slot guy. Philip Gaines is going to be playing a lot, period. But I think it's fascinating. I really, and maybe, I guess if you're listening to this in the offseason, you're also in kind of the Chiefs football nerddom that I'm in right now. But I think the way this secondary ends up developing is going to be truly super interesting, because I'm worried for this season a little bit because of the inexperience. But if one of the rookies, Russell, Murray, or White, really hits, one of those three, which is not an impossible success rate by any means, Marcus Peters already hitting. If Steven Nelson or Philip Gaines really hit, which I think one of them, I think is very reasonable to ask, the Chiefs are going to end up with three super talented, super young, super cheap corners. I've said forever, in the NFL, you have to go cheap somewhere. The Broncos right now are moving around a lot of money because they're super cheap at quarterback right now. They let Brock Osweiler walk, and Peyton Manning retired. The spot the Chiefs are doing this is not defensive line, although it's going to get cheaper next year. Not the linebackers, obviously, ton of money there. Not running backs, ton of money there. Not receivers, paying Jeremy Maclin. Not quarterback. Not safeties with Ron Parker and Eric Berry, certainly. It's the corners. The corners are the you know, quote unquote cheap group for the Chiefs are doing here. And in doing that, they're taking a gamble on saying these young guys have got to hit. We need these young guys to develop and to fit for this year. But I think right now they've made some very, very smart bets, and this year we're going to see either the beginning of a long term payoff or a total implosion. But honestly, even as a pretty cynical Chiefs fan, I feel really good about the future of the secondary. Adam Teicher over for ESPN.com put together a 53-man roster prediction for the 2016 Chiefs. This is something that I think is kind of an interesting starting point because so much can change at the bottom of the rosters through training camp, and obviously we're still out about a month out from training camp now. But here's a few things that I thought were interesting from Teicher's depth chart, who he has making or missing the cut. Starting with the quarterbacks, this is a fun conversation. Quarterbacks are interesting. Talked a lot last week about the importance, or not the importance, but what you can do with a young and cheap quarterback. It's why every team should be drafting a quarterback every year, in my opinion. For Teicher, the three quarterbacks are Alex Smith, Tyler Bray, and Kevin Hogan. Obviously leaving Aaron Murray off the list here. This is going to be one of the most interesting battles on the entire team. I think at this point you've got to be pretty confident that Kevin Hogan is the new kind of developmental guy, and with that logic you would say, okay, well the second guy has to be someone who can come in and play three or four games with the Chiefs and keep them in a playoff race if Alex Smith gets sprains his ankle or something that knocks him out for a short length of time. Losing Alex Smith for the season is going to be a death wish for any backup quarterback here, but. Then I argue the other side of it, saying I want this guy, whoever this guy is, behind Alex Smith to be somebody who I see having a future in the league, being able to be that next guy up. I think Tyler Bray has a higher ceiling, and Aaron Murray has a much higher floor. Kevin Hogan, I can't judge it all either way. It's one reason the Kevin Hogan pick surprised me a little bit, because I think Tyler Bray as the third quarterback, the guy with the high ceiling you try to develop, made a ton of sense for the years that he's been in that spot. And then Aaron Murray as a second guy, you know, backing up, coming in to fill Chase Daniels' shoes or to fill Chase Daniels' clipboard, that made a ton of sense also. Now with Kevin Hogan here demanding a spot on the roster, surely inactive for the entire season, the Chiefs have to decide who is, or like, not only who's more valuable, but they have to decide what's more important or who gets a bigger lead in either scenario that it eventually puts them over the top. I'll explain if that was confusing. Again, Tyler Bray, higher ceiling. Aaron Murray, higher floor. What's more valuable to the Chiefs right now? What's more valuable to the Chiefs 2 years from now? The problem is, those answers are different. If you say, which quarterback do I want as a starter for the Chiefs in 2 years, I got to pick one, I'll say, you know what, give me Tyler Bray. I think he has a better chance of being a playoff caliber quarterback If you say, which guy do you want to play four games in the middle of the season because Alex Smith strained his ankle, I'll take Aaron Murray. Every time. I don't think either of those are all that close. For me, Kevin Hogan is here to replace Aaron Murray, but he's not going to be ready to replace Aaron Murray until at least next season. I have a very hard time seeing the Chiefs trusting Kevin Hogan in an in-game scenario as a rookie. Andy Reid hasn't trusted Alex Smith with a lot of stuff 3 years into the system. Kevin Hogan's not going to get it 3 months into the system. So Hogan is not a factor, but they're not going to cut him. I think the Chiefs have made up their mind to some extent, which is one reason I think this Tyler Bray thing is real. I don't think the Chiefs would have been ready to cut bait with Aaron Murray for the sake of trying to bring up Kevin Hogan if they didn't feel like they had something worthwhile in Tyler Bray. So I actually really like the Smith Bray Hogan lineup depth chart, whatever. But it is going to be, if Aaron Murray has a really nice preseason and can convince the Chiefs brass, and to a much lesser extent me and you and Chiefs fans, that he also has a high enough ceiling to justify keeping him on the roster, then this will be a much easier decision to make. But if Tyler Bray goes out and lights it up, I think the clamoring is only going to get louder. For the running backs, it's Nile Davis who doesn't make the cut. Charles, Ware, West, that's easy. We can talk about the backfield, though, here in just a little bit. Fullback Anthony Sherman. Wide receivers are also interesting. Jeremy Maclin, Albert Wilson, Chris Conley are all locks. In my mind, DeMarcus Robinson also a lock. Tyreek Hill is going to make the team. That's to Tyshire and my viewpoints. What it leaves here then for Tyshire is strictly Rod Streeter. Everybody else are rookies. Guys have been here long enough. Guys are going to make the team. It's surprising when you only carry six wide receivers who falls off the list. Now, the Chiefs just had one guy go down with injury. Kenny Cook is on the IR now, who probably wasn't going to make the team anyway. But with Tyshire's list, Mike Williams, D'Anthony Thomas, Frankie Hammond Jr. all missed the cut. But if they carry six receivers, that's probably going to happen. I still have a soft spot for Mike Williams' potential, but I understand not only the roster limitations, but how unlikely it is that he hits that. And I would rather see the Chiefs carry DeMarcus Robinson, who they just drafted. I would rather see them carry... They're going to be keeping Tyreek Hill, D'Anthony Thomas, and I believe very strongly they're going to be keeping one of those two. They're redundant players right now. And whoever gets released, especially if D'Anthony Thomas gets cut, he'll find a spot like Dexter McCluster did, doing what he was supposed to do here. And I like D'Anthony Thomas more than Dexter McCluster. The Chiefs must think that Tyreek Hill is the next evolution of that. And we can always talk about Tyreek Hill's off-the-field stuff. He recently talked about Kansas City fans really being accepting of him and everything. And that's fine. I'm not arguing, and I'm not going to argue at any point, that Chiefs fans ought to be harassing him or, you know, trying to... I mean, if you wanted to protest, I guess that's fine, because I think that's, as I talked about right after the draft, it's reasonable to say the Chiefs should not have drafted Tyreek Hill. I've said that consistently. And as I've said before, the outrage will stop whenever he takes a touchdown back or takes a kickoff back for a touchdown. The outrage will end there. Michael Vick, the protest for Michael Vick slowed down whenever he started playing well. That's going to happen all the time with all of these guys. Ray Rice is no longer in the league, not because we have video, and we do have video, and that's huge also. We have video of him punching his fiance. It's because he can't play anymore. Adrian Peterson might have a more ambiguous scenario with his kid. We have pictures, though, of lashes on his kid, but he's still Adrian Peterson, so he's playing. It's how the NFL works, and that should make you feel gross. It makes me feel gross, too, and we're still watching, so the NFL might just be an impenetrable fortress. Anyway, that's the Tyreek Hill update for now. Those received, I again agree with Tyshire here. I would like to see Mike Williams justify getting a roster spot. This is the most interesting positional group, though, from Tyshire, and one reason the Chiefs are only keeping six receivers in this 53-man is because he has the Chiefs carrying four tight ends. Even more surprising to me, James O'Shaughnessy is not on this list. Now, James O'Shaughnessy, if you forgot, was the 37th pick in the fifth round last year for the Chiefs, and missed not quite the whole season, but he was injured early on and didn't have meaningful playing time particularly. I'm surprised not to see him on this list. I expected him at first glance to be probably the third guy here behind Demetrius Harris, but here's what Tyshire writes. Quote, it's unorthodox for a team to keep four healthy players here, but the Chiefs could well go this way. Kelsey, Demetrius Harris, Ross Travis, are the receiving options. The 265-pound Brian Parker gives them a big-bodied blocker. we know that Andy Reid loves tight ends. I think part of it, that's the reason we all didn't bat an eye whenever they drafted James O'Shaughnessy. So it wouldn't shock me to have the Chiefs carry four tight ends, but to see Ross Travis over James O'Shaughnessy is a bit of a surprise to me. If Travis doesn't sound familiar to you, it's because he barely made a blip last year, but he's not a rookie. He's a second-year player. Last year, he spent a lot of time on the Chiefs practice squad. He played at Penn State. Important side note, he played basketball at Penn State. And we've seen over and over the tight end position bringing in basketball players to play tight end. That's pretty common, which is a little strange, but makes sense, I suppose, if you want to look at it from a purely physical standpoint. Regardless, he's on the practice squad last year. If the Chiefs do think that his physical tools and then his development advanced O'Shaughnessy's, there are undrafted guys, practice squad guys, who beat out a fifth-round pick in the second year all the time. And that would not bother me. Similar to the cornerback situation, I want to see guys who we didn't expect to make big leaps. Once you're in the second or third year, eventually, I would say probably third or fourth year, the round you're drafted in only matters if it's a cap situation. If you're James O'Shaughnessy with a contract compared to Ross Travis is pretty even keeled, you might want to give the higher draft pick the benefit of the doubt because they showed more talent, they showed more promise. But if eventually that guy gets overtaken and you want to carry Ross Travis as your third tight end, then also keep Brian Parker as your fourth one as a blocking one, I'm not going to take any issue with that. And we all know that it would fit the Chiefs' offense pretty well, especially because we don't have a ton of faith in those wide receivers just yet, where the second option is Albert Wilson, who is apparently getting more reps at the slot in OTAs, which makes sense because that's where he should be. I digress. Offensive line, 8 offensive linemen here: Eric Fisher, Parker Anger, Mitch Morse, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, Mitchell Schwartz, Ja Reed, Zach Fulton, and Jerod Pugsley. I think that if Reed and Fulton don't get the starting spots, and Reed can play both tackle positions, Fulton can play center or guard, then there's a really good chance that we see Pugsley go back to the practice squad. I understand you want to carry 8 offensive linemen to make sure you never run out of linemen in a game, but if you're carrying Brian Parker, maybe you have him in a situation where he can go to an emergency tackle position. It's not ideal, obviously, but you're carrying 7 linemen. It gives you more flexibility to take Mike Williams, to take that fourth tight end, to take another linebacker. So that's just some extra flexibility there, and they will certainly keep a couple linemen on their practice squad, according to Tyshir. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Defensive line, this is the easiest group, I think. Allen Bailey, Dontari Poe, Jay Howard, Chris Jones, all literally 100% locks. Nick Williams being the fifth guy here. Tyshir says they don't have roster room to do that. Only carrying 5 defensive linemen on a 3-4 defensive line front is not horrible, but if they send Pugsley back to the practice squad, maybe they carry a guy like Raheem Nunez-Roches, who is, I think, probably the best guy to fight up against Nick Williams for that last defensive line spot. Something to keep your eye on, but there's a lot of depth in that defensive line, man. That is a talented, talented group. And we'll talk about Dontari Poe a little bit later also with a listener question. Linebackers, Tyshir goes D4, Tamba Hali, easy, Frank Zombo, Desmond Moses, Dottie Nicholas, Derek Johnson, Josh Malgood, Justin March, and Ramique Wilson. And he said, and that doesn't include Justin Houston. Tyshir writes, quote, "Houston's the wild card here. I'm assuming he won't be ready to play when the regular season begins. If the Chiefs carry him on the roster, then Moses goes." This is a pretty interesting group. Justin March made a lot of noise in the preseason last year, then got injured before he ever got to get on the field, if memory serves. Once again, similarly to a lot of guys I feel like I've talked about today, hurt so early on that we didn't really get to see the actual his actual production. In fact, I'm going to jump ahead now to a question from Kasson Brown at ChiefPriest_25, tweeted me last week. Said, "Is Justin March taking Josh Malgo's spot in the starting lineup? That's one of my bold predictions on this roster." I really like that. From what we saw from Justin March last year, I think if we would have been playing through last season and we would have gotten to see him develop throughout the year, then right now we would be talking about that the battles going on in the linebacker group there on the inside, especially. I think that that's giving a little bit or not giving quite enough credit to Josh Malga. He's one of the guys that for some reason there's nothing sexy about going, "Oh, Josh Malga had a nice game." But whenever he stepped up I'm sure he's played multiple spots across that linebacker group, he seemed to produce pretty consistently lately. So I'm not sure that he's a guy to have in your crosshair to try to get out of the lineup, but the idea that maybe Justin March, kind of out of nowhere, one of those out of nowhere guys, that he might have a little bit of explosive impact player potential, I like that. And I think Justin March is going to be a very, very interesting player to watch throughout training camp, through the preseason, and then hopefully on the field this year. Going to skip to special teams really quick. Dustin Colquitt, Cairo Santos, James Winchester are the punter, kicker, long snapper. That's easy. So now go back to the secondary, which I know I've talked about a ton already. Just quickly, though, cornerbacks, Marcus Peters, check. Philip Gaines, check. Steven Nelson, check. Kavari Russell, check. Marcus Cooper, interesting to me. I think this makes sense, but I don't think he's starting. Like I said earlier, I think he's more likely to be cut than to start. Most likely, I think, is he's the last guy on the depth chart. Then the safety position, though, you might recognize some names that didn't show up there. Well, a lot of them come here because these guys are listed as safeties on Tyser's list. Eric Berry, Ron Parker, Stevie Brown, Jamel Fleming, Daniel Sorensen, Eric Murray. He says six is a lot of safeties, but they'll all play a role with the possible exception of Murray. But as a fourth-round pick, he'll make the team. He certainly will. I think I talked about him earlier playing some safety. The guy who doesn't make this list is DJ White, the sixth-round pick out of Georgia Tech. He might be the guy, or he will probably likely have to be the guy, to unseat Marcus Cooper to get that last spot in the cornerback depth chart. But as a sixth-round pick, I understand Tyser's skepticism of him making the team. I'd like to see it because it's always fun to root for guys that are more unknown. Because, again, they have more potential. And Marcus Cooper, we've seen his best, and that was a couple of years ago. Seeing Stevie Brown is a guy that we're going to forget about all the time. In an ideal world, he's going to be that third safety where eventually halfway through the year we're going, man, Stevie Brown really is playing pretty nice. This is great. And Jamel Fleming is saying, oh, Jamel Fleming, he plays much better at safety. Daniel Sorensen, no slouch. Eric Murray might be a special team exclusive guy here, but long term, he's supposed to have a role on this team. I feel really good about how the secondary is shaping up here, and it's still my biggest concern for this season. But the long term potential with this secondary group is so strong. So there's a pre-training camp, post-OTAs, 53-man roster by Adam Tyser. Hopefully my thoughts on it made something interesting. Now let's dive in to the next topic we've got here. Let's look at the Chiefs' offense, not only the triplets rankings from Bill Barnwell, but also the best and worst case scenarios in the backfield. So Bill Barnwell went through the NFL 32-1 and ranked each set of offensive triplets. It had to include a quarterback, and every one, I believe, includes a wide receiver. There might be a set that has a running back and a tight end, but they have to have a quarterback and then two offensive players. In a lot of cases, they ended up not including a running back, which I think is really interesting and would benefit the Chiefs in these rankings. That doesn't really matter either way. Just for the AFC West, to go from the bottom to the top, you have the Denver Broncos at 19 with Mark Sanchez, Demaryius Thomas, and Emmanuel Sanders. The Oakland Raiders at 18 with Derek Carr, Amari Cooper, and Michael Crabtree as the third leg of it. The San Diego Chargers at 14 with Phillip Rivers, Melvin Gordon, and Keenan Allen. And up at 11 is where the Chiefs come in with Alex Smith, Jamal Charles, and Jeremy Maclin. After reading this list top to bottom, I think that 11 is the beginning of a new tier here. At 12 is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Jameis Winston, Doug Martin, Mike Evans. That's a really good set of triplets there. Before that is Andrew Luck, T.Y. Hilton, and Frank Gore. So 12 with the Buccaneers or 11 with the Chiefs, I think, is the beginning of a new section of these rankings. Saints are next with Drew Brees, Mark Ingram, and Brandon Cooks. That seems about the right angle. Blake Bortles and Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns with the Jaguars are at 9. You could argue the Chiefs should jump that. They also have T.J. Yeldon, which I think is going to be a pretty good running back, but he's less than Allen Hurns, I suppose. And then up to the Falcons at 8, Matt Ryan, Devonta Freeman, and Julio Jones. Devonta Freeman had a really good short stretch, but he hasn't proven that much in the league. And then you get to Cincinnati, Dallas, Arizona, Carolina, Green Bay, New England, and the Steelers at number 1. And that's all fine. But so looking at the Chiefs at 11, I think, as I feel like I've said this a bunch this offseason, as we looked at national coverage of the Chiefs, there are some fair criticisms, some fair praises, and some criticisms that I think, from our perspective as Chiefs fans, Chiefs followers, whatever, some criticisms that are just a little bit off base. So again, the Chiefs triplet here is Smith, Charles, and Maclin. Travis Kelce is a nice fourth weapon. Here's what Bill Barnwell writes, though. Quote, Smith has run an efficient, reliably above-average offense since arriving in Kansas City 3 seasons ago. He's thrown his average pass 6.88 yards in the air, nearly a full yard shorter than any other qualifying passer in the NFL. I add parenthetically, fair criticism. But it has worked for the Chiefs. Fair qualifier. Charles has been a devastating playmaker when healthy, and Macklin's body control and hands make him capable of incredible catches. The problems are injuries for Charles and Macklin, fair, and a total lack of depth behind them in playmaker roles outside of tight end Travis Kelce. The Chiefs were able to get by with Charcandrick West and Spencer Ware as a running back rotation when Charles went down last season, but they're hardly star contributors, and Albert Wilson and Chris Conley were stuck playing meaningful snaps at wide receiver. Injury fears are always going to be fears for the rest of Jamaal Charles and Jerry Macklin's careers. That's something we have to simply live with. Except for what you can do behind them, which is build depth. What the Chiefs have in the backfield is fascinating to me, and will be the very next thing I talk about here. But the backup receivers, talk about receivers a ton. I think Chris Conley makes a nice step. I think if Jerry Macklin gets hurt, Chris Conley will make a tremendous, tremendous step this next season. I hope he doesn't have to. And I think if Albert Wilson stays home at the slot, then he will also become a reliable, honestly, reliable slot guy. It's probably the highest praise I can give him right now. I've become a little bit bullish in a bad way on Albert Wilson's potential. I feel like I've seen him alligator arm too many passes going deep. But he can play the slot, and I'm fine with that. The rest of the wide receiver rotation is absolutely suspect. Maybe you think that Tyreek Hill can provide something on the offensive side of the ball, along with Robinson out of Florida. But those are rookies, man. Rookies don't do very much in Andy Reid systems. So I think those are fair criticisms there. Moving on, though, so that's where Barnwell puts the Chiefs on a national level as far as sets of triplets go. However, on 810 last weekend with TJ Carpenter, if you're listening to the podcast anywhere, you can go to the 810 app and listen to Sports Saturday and Sports Sunday, where TJ and I were on for the whole show. And one of the things we talked about this entire segment just devoted to talking about the Chiefs' backfield. And TJ, his fear is that Jamaal Charles is never quite the same again. You don't tear both ACLs and come back as the same person unless you're Adrian Peterson. Once again, I think that is a very fair fear. It's not really a criticism, but it's hard to come back from tearing your ACL twice. Jamaal Charles was doing it awfully well until it happened again, coming back from one ACL tear. Coming back from a second one is very difficult. Nearly unprecedented, I'm sure, for a star back to tear each ACL. I understand that fear. I really do. He's had a lot of rehab time. He'll be ready to go at the start of the season, and I expect to see him do a lot of very Jamaal Charles-y things. But even then, I think he's going to get maybe 50% of the backfield touches, not even carries, touches out of the backfield. You go 50 to Charles. They're paying Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West for a reason. The Chiefs extended both of them this offseason. That was very much on purpose. If it's an insurance policy because they're scared of Jamaal Charles' durability, that makes total sense. If they want to say, we're going to extend Jamaal Charles' life on this team by giving touches to two other guys, that makes sense. If they say they bring different things to the table that Jamaal Charles brings, that's true for Spencer Ware. Charcandrick West, I think, is pretty essentially a poor man's Jamaal Charles. And we want to be able to have all three of these guys as real weapons on this team because we know where our strengths are. That makes a lot of sense. I am super fine with the Chiefs paying all three of those running backs. In the NFL, it's hard to pay running backs right now because they're all pretty inconsistent. But to pay those three guys, I'm completely okay with that. What that means, though, is even if Jamaal Charles does show significant regression, that he is significantly on the downslope of his career. And I think we could all agree that he is at best plateauing. We're not going to see him have a career year by my mind here. What does that mean though for the backfield if that actually happens? I don't think it would be that devastating. So hear me out. Another fear from TJ was that Ware and West have gone through the league now one time. There's a lot of footage on them, a lot of game tape of those guys. It should be easier for the defenses to figure them out. I buy that theory with a lot of young players through the NFL. Say, oh, second year, there's going to be a regression. And I fear that for Marcus Peters on the same team. But there is often a regression for guys who have gone through the league long enough for guys to start to figure out that player. I'm not that afraid of it for this Chiefs backfield. Because we know what both of these guys are. We know what Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West can do. We've probably seen their best, potentially. But I think in so many cases, the reason they were so good last year is because they're a part of this Andy Reid system. This system is built for those guys to have success. Jamaal Charles is a huge luxury in this offense because he can do Andy Reid system stuff and also do truly superstar, Hall of Fame, Pro Bowl level running back stuff. His name is beside Barry Sanders and Jim Brown all over the place in the NFL history book right now. That's not being the product of a system. But if Weston Ware are simply products of this system with the talent to pull it off consistently, this backfield's floor is very, very high. Jamaal Charles at 75 or 80% of himself is going to be, and listen, when running backs lose one step, so 20% might be too much. When running backs lose one step, you can go ahead and take them out to the farm. I understand that running backs can disappear in weeks, or you know, from the injury to the beginning of the next year, you could see Jamaal Charles be a guy who looks like he's running on two restructured knees and go, oh man, he's half a step slower, and now he's getting caught in ways he never got caught in years past. That absolutely could happen. Even if it does, though, I think because of the investment in Ware and West, the Chiefs' backfield is prepared for that. And I don't expect to see Charles take that big of a step backwards. He might slow down a little bit, but in a way where I think he'll still be productive as the leader of this three-headed monster out of the backfield. So even the worst-case scenario, even if Jamaal Charles is a shell of himself, I think the Chiefs are going to have a really productive running game in 2016. If you've listened to 35 minutes of this show, I'd like to believe you've been enjoying it, and a bunch of people who do enjoy it help support this show, and you can do the same thing at patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. People donating $20 on a monthly basis are Don Beal at DonBeal32 on Twitter, Andy Simpson, Stephen Smith, and Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88 on Twitter. $10 group is Ty DeClaire, who's been around forever, at TyDeClaire44 on Twitter. Plus $5 group, Josh Beadle and Jason Essler. You can see what each of these groups gets you. You get a Twitter shout out for the $20 or $10 group, and any question you want asked if you're in the $20 group, I will answer it, even if it's about, I don't know, the meaning of life. I'll do my best, I promise. Those people have been supporting this show for a long, long time, helping to make sure it comes out free and consistently, and I do my best on both of those things. Also, as I mentioned now, there are some ads at the beginning, end of the show, through Blog Talk Radio. Those things are supporting the show, so if you click on those and simply sit through them, you're supporting the show that way as well. The last couple things you can do is subscribe to the show on iTunes or through whatever podcast app that you use. Make sure you get every show as soon as it comes out. That's hugely important. Plus, leaving a review on iTunes, throw 5 stars to the show and write down why you like the show. Apparently, that really helps people see the show through iTunes and reach whole new audiences. And I firmly believe that as more and more Chiefs fans listen to the show, the conversations can get bigger and better. And I'm really excited for that. As always, you can contact me on Twitter at JBBriscoe. Send me questions, ideas, suggestions for the show. Always willing to listen to anything you can shoot to me that way. You can throw stuff in the comments on Arrowhead Addict of the comment sections of these shows, or on the comments of the Facebook page at facebook.com/RTK show. You can go to the Blog Talk Radio page, blogtalkradio.com/RTK, or to the Arrowhead Addict archive of all of these shows and their posts, including little write-ups that I do every week at tiny.cc/RTK on AA. Now, as I said about the questions from the $20 group, I was going to answer this question either way, but if you're in that group and send me a question, I will answer it. That's what Don Beal is taking advantage of here. He said, what is the likelihood of the Chiefs keep Dontari Poe after looking at Fletcher Cox's new deal in Philadelphia? If you don't know, the Philadelphia Eagles signed Fletcher Cox, defensive end, to a 6-year deal for over $100 million, $103, and $63 million guaranteed. Dontari Poe is a big defensive lineman with a contract ending after this season. Let's look at first why these aren't comparable, and then I'll answer how they are. Fletcher Cox is a defensive end in a 3-4 defense. Dontari Poe is a nose tackle in a 3-4 defense. Now for the Chiefs, that's Jay Howard, Alan Bailey, and maybe some Chris Jones. We'll see where he ends up settling on this defensive line. Those guys get sacks. That's the biggest metric difference you can see between these guys. And Fletcher Cox is very, very good at it. He's probably the best in the league as a defensive end in a 3-4 defense at getting to the quarterback. That is hugely important to why his number is so large. Dontari Poe is a disruptor, both a run stuffer and a disruptor in the pocket. Getting pressure up the middle, in my mind, is one of the most important and most underrated things in all of the NFL, in all of football. If you can get pressure up the middle, every single quarterback gets worse. That's how you take down Tom Brady. It's how you beat Peyton Manning. It's how you beat the elite pocket quarterbacks. If they can't step up, and they can always step up if you have rushers from the edge, it's where the limitations of a Justin Houston come in, who's, again, a great, great player. But if he's penetrating from the outside, that quarterback has space to step up. that's not going to be that much of a consequence for the offense. Pressure up the middle is hugely important, but Dontari Poe doesn't rack up the kind of stats that Fletcher Cox has gotten. So I think we have to establish, as we just did, it's kind of a sloppy comparison, but it's probably the best that we have right now. Dontari Poe is going to be hitting his first deal outside of his rookie contract, and in 2017, just for a gauge of where his franchise tag number will probably be, Arrowhead Pride estimates it'd be about $15 million to franchise tag Dontari Poe next season, and they would not be able to do more than that in my mind. And the Chiefs are going to be walking into some cap issues very soon. I mean, they already are. They still haven't signed Eric Berry to a long-term deal. Eric Fisher is looking for a new deal. Travis Kelce's locked up. The rest of the defensive line is locked up. Justin Houston's locked up. But the importance of getting Eric Berry's long-term deal done and Eric Fisher's long-term deal done, Eric Fisher's going to be very expensive also. All three of these guys are going to be very expensive. The Chiefs have to decide what's the most important, what's the most vital to this team. I'm contending that Dontari Poe is actually third on that list. He might be the best player at his position of those three guys. Like, if you said, hey, give me, you know, where's Dontari Poe among nose tackles in football? You say, I don't know, seven. Is Eric Berry a top seven safety? Is Eric Fisher a top seven tackle? I don't know. Those are all totally off top of my head numbers that I did not put any thought into, so do not take those too seriously. But Dontari Poe is very valuable and very good at his position. However, the Chiefs' depth, the deepest unit on the team, is the defensive line. That could all change if it turns out that Chris Jones is not a fit at nose. So I think Chris Jones playing nose tackle makes a ton of sense because he's here to replace Dontari Poe. It's what the Chiefs have done with Marcus Cooper for Sean Smith. It's what they did with Eric Fisher for Brandon Albert. It's what they've done. They thought they might have to do with D. Ford for Tom Bahali. It's young guys coming in to replace the veteran after one season. I think that all fits this mold just perfectly for Chris Jones taking over for Dontari Poe. So while I think there is if Chris similarly to what happened with D. Ford, if you look at D. Ford's progression, the Chiefs saw enough to make them hesitate to say this guy is not ready yet. We're going to be paying Justin Houston big money as the Chiefs are paying Howard and Alan Bailey already. But we are going to have to keep Tom Bahali around a little longer because D. Ford's not ready yet. That is also, speaking of sloppy examples, because Tom Bahali was in the declining years of his career. Dontari Poe is going to go make a lot of money somewhere else in my prediction from here. Maybe they say, let's see if we can get Poe to play out a franchise tag in 2017. But if that happens, they're going to have to let either Berry. I think Berry's deal's got to get done before this season. So they probably end up letting Eric Fisher walk, and then you're looking at probably bringing other guys, but you're looking at maybe a Ja Reed, Mitchell Schwartz set of starting tackles for 2017, and I would rather see Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz and Ron Parker next to Eric Berry, and then have Chris Jones at the nose, rather than see Ja Reed start at left tackle, or Eric Berry go elsewhere to have Dontari Poe stay at the nose. So I love what Dontari Poe brings whenever he's on the field. At the same time, I don't think the money makes sense for the Chiefs. That price tag is going to be too high considering the value they have. If they have Jay Howard play a lot more nose and let Chris Jones play on the end, that would be perfectly fine by me. Jay Howard's probably going to be looking for a new deal after next season as well, though his new deal is for 2 years. The defensive line contracts before Bailey, Howard, and Poe are all pretty short. I believe Bailey has 3 years left on his. Howard has 2 left on his. Those guys are going to want new money pretty soon. The Jay Howard deal shocked me whenever he signed a 2-year deal after what a great season he had last year. So maybe we see ultimately if Chris Jones is more of a natural fit at the end spot and Jay Howard can slide in to play the nose, we see a Bailey Howard Jones front three. And still, even as we sort of say, well, maybe this, maybe this, maybe this, maybe this, there's still incredible flexibility for the Chiefs can do on the defensive line that they don't have, especially with Eric Fisher, or they don't believe they have at safety with an elite talent like Eric Berry because they franchise tagged him already. So I would say, if I was going to put a percentage on it, I'd say there's a 20% chance that Dontari Poe is on this team in 2017 and a 10% chance he's on this team 3 years from now. Maybe even more accurately, I would say there's a less than 10% chance that Alan Bailey, Jay Howard, and Dontari Poe are all on this team 3 years from now. those guys are going to have to get moved, or something's going to have to change with their money to allow for that much money to go into the defensive line. So I think it's very unlikely that Dontari Poe was a Chief in 2017, with the Fletcher Cox deal being a reasonable comparison to look at the price tag and go, oh my goodness, now I understand the Chris Jones pick better. As we close out this show, I want to drive by Denver quickly. Gary Kubiak is being coy about his Mark Sanchez, Trevor Siemian quarterback battle quotes here. Paxton Lynch seems to be the third guy in the lineup right now, saying that Siemian and Sanchez are neck and neck, and that they also signed Brandon Marshall to a four-year extension, which does not lock out Von Miller because Denver's not paying a quarterback long-term big money. So that's the kind of flexibility you have whenever you've got cheap quarterbacks, which pulls together stuff I said from last week, this week. This whole show is just one big long narrative. I've just got like 3 points that I keep repeating in different situations, I think. As always, thank you for listening to the show. I'm Joshua Briscoe. This has been the Revenue the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com, Arrowhead Addict Radio. Thank you always for your tweets, your suggestions, your thoughts on the show, things that could be doing differently, better, things you're enjoying along the way. Going into the dark days of NFL summer, I'll be trying to make something happen. I might have to drive to Arrowhead and make some news of my own. I'm thinking about trying to rob a Tommy Bahama shirt from Andy Reid.
Sir, but could you drop the bass?
I don't know why I said that. Bye, Mom!